Get right up and tell me I'm numb. A podcast that'll make your mind blow. Weird things with Justin and Brian. And an answer we're gonna take them all away. It's true. Exploring mysteries. The unexplained, from UFOs to the buried on mobile domain. Unraveling secrets, uncovering the strange. You'll never see the world in the same way again. So buckle up and let your curiosity soar. On with things, your mind is on board.
Where we should fade it out and tease the episode.
On the weird things, we have this and this, and now back to the show.
We promise it is the podcast.
Oh,
hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. That's the first time we ever heard that song. We just typed in "write a Weird Things podcast intro" and gave it our names. And that was Suno AI that wrote that. We had two versions. We played one. Said, okay, let's try the other one. And they're like, Brian and Jess are like, let's just go open up with the other one. Like, all right, nothing unsafe about that. And there you go.
I like the part where it didn't curse or besmirch anybody and was generally positive and understood the point of our podcast.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah, we talked about this before in previous episodes, and this week we have a new contender besides Suno AI. We also have Udio, which is actually some of the team members from worked on one of the Google Music projects. They have created that. They've had some stuff that's gone viral. Have you heard Dune, the Broadway musical?
Oh, who hasn't heard of Dune, the Broadway musical? I don't remember all of it, but if you hum a few bars, I think I'll
hum
get
a
it
few
back.
Bars
okay,
for you, Brian.
Here we
you
go.
Ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Qualities of Eric Keen, the greatest leader we've ever seen. They say that he's the list and El Gai. Eyes bright blue and hair jet black. You should see him ride on a sandworm's back. Lead us to victory, you soul.
Wow, their vocals are a lot cleaner.
So that was Dune, the Broadway musical by Bobby B on Udio, one of the staff picks right now.
No, that's amazing. I will say we've had a lot of fun with Suno on Great Night, and it is truly exceptional. But the vocals on that are really, really clean comparatively.
Suno does kind of have, for lack of a better word, a mushy sound to it. Like it's overly choral and hard. You have
which to put, I think works in some genres. Like
right.
If there's a lot of fuzz in a guitar, if there's a lot of a soaring vocals in a pop song, then it kind of fits. But that was amazing. Oh my God.
So yeah, the thing that I'm getting error messages right now on Udio, which I think it's probably because of the demand, but you know, you have to figure out what you want to optimize for. Now, the nice thing about Suno is it will do longer clips. It'll automatically do 2 minutes. So you can keep extending it. Udio will do that, but the first clip it puts out is like 30 seconds. And so you can see where, you know, they're trying to make a decision between, okay, do we do higher quality, shorter clips, or do we do medium quality, longer clips and whatnot? But
I would prefer the 30-second version, to be totally honest with you, just so you know
where it's going. It's like it's more like a pitch, right?
Yeah.
It's just it is such a crazy time right now. And every week is just, and sometimes every day we're getting new AI developments, and it is not going too slow. And it can be, I get intimidated and I follow the stuff pretty heavily, but I'm increasingly, I get these consultation calls where I got to go in and do briefings for companies and stuff on, you know, the tech going on there. And, you know, periodically I get caught by surprise, like, oh, what do you think about this? I'm like, what is that? And I got to.
I assume he's saying that he's got to go figure it out what it is.
I think he's back.
Maybe.
Every day, the internet, it's like it'll come in threes.
Brian, it's in the way that you use it.
Yes, it's in the way that we use
it. Yeah, it comes and it goes.
Yeah.
I mean, the music stuff has been fascinating, and it's it really kind of makes you think about the future of content, the idea of, you know, like I was playing that Eclipse track that you sent in our group chat before we started, right? And Brian was like, oh, is that a new one or an old one? And I'm like, Brian, in an era of AI content, the old one is obsolete. They are all new ones forever, possibly from here on out.
Yeah, the thing that I think we haven't wrapped our heads around is, you know, I remember a friend making a cassette tape of like Dr. Demento's show and to listen to the latest Weird Al Yankovic song. And man, I sound a billion years old. But
oh no, I'm here for it. I remember Brian, those.
I'm words. Not. You're ancient. Move on.
Brian, you're a billion minus one. So, that was that novelty and how special that was to all, you know, a crackling recording of roly-poly fish heads and whatever. Amazing. And now we're at a moment where, you know, you guys introduced me last week, Brian did, to Obscurest Vinyl, where doing just hilarious songs and also taking like these old retro images as the album art.
Yeah.
And creating something new that you kind of go, that's hilarious. And we're in this point where you get a miracle. You can have a miracle at the snap of your fingers. You could get a song and you know, there are going to be debates about, oh, is it as good as this? Is it as good as that? Like, I don't know. I was laughing my butt off to the Obscurest Vinyl songs as much as I have with other things. If you'd said this was, you know, other than The Voice, like, oh, this is, you know, a new Weird Al or something like that. Yeah. I'd be like, oh, cool. And they're like, ha ha, pull out the label. It's AI. And you're like, yeah, it's really fun and cool.
And we've talked about this on After Things. We also know that there's a human curating it. Like at the end point, there's somebody who had an idea and wrote the prompt, and there's somebody else who decided is funny.
And beyond that, that presentation, if you're not aware, TikTok, there is an account called Obscurest Vinyl. We won't play any of the songs because they are almost universally just filthy, but they all follow this. The best of them follow this very, very specific pattern. You're on TikTok. There's a lot of TikTok that is a young audience where you are reintroducing old things in new ways to an audience that has not experienced them. So the reason why I got fed that was because I get a lot of like music documentaries and interviews from old musicians about X, Y, and Z. And so they knew I like that and I like comedy. And so Obscurest Vinyl made specifically for that, with the idea, the promise, the inherent promise in the name being, look at these songs that are really good, but never got attention. And you quickly realize that these are not just novelty songs from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. They are parody songs that are really, really, really obscene.
I would say more raunchy than anything else. obscene conveys to me that they're arousing in some way, and none of them are arousing, but they are raunchy and bawdy as hell.
Sure. Yeah. Salt to taste on exactly what you take those words to mean, but they use a lot of curse words and they are very scatological. They have these themes that start in the way that a good joke does. It lures you in to be like, oh, this is an interesting novelty song from the 50s. And then it's just like, oh, they would use that word back then, huh? Like, maybe that's why it didn't get popular. And then they just keep using it and saying bizarre, weird things. But that's great. But you're right.
I think it's inbound to talk about the baptism song where the refrain is just dunk the blanking kid.
Yeah. Yeah, this baptism effing sucks is one of them. But, like, there's a presentation there. It shows you the album art. They are well done, so it looks like it could have been from that era. And then the song slowly dawns on you. But it's a great look at something where, instead of that being, if it were legitimate, like an archivist thing, or you know, you're photoshopping it, now that just comes faster, and the creative spark that it took to make that is the exact same as if you were to go and record it and create these album arts. You probably wouldn't do that because it would be prohibitively expensive for what is essentially a dumb joke that takes about a minute and a half to play out. But now we can have that dumb joke, and guess what? It's a great minute and a half.
Well, and there have been precedents, like I think of, was it Arlo Guthrie's Alice's Restaurant or whatever, where it's like, if you were in the record shop back when those were a thing and you saw it, you're like, oh, this looks like an album, but it's essentially a one note joke mixed with a monologue.
Yeah.
But you didn't know that when you bought it, and it does have a good hook at the end. Basically we're just faster on that. I love that multimodality joke telling where it's like, there's the visual element that primes you. There's the hook that makes you think it's a song, and then you find out it's something very, very different.
Yeah.
What is the world look like? What does the world look like when, you know, like the thing I was looking at was to see, does like Suno AI have like a API, a way that I could plug it in? Because I thought, like, oh, it would be really fun at the there's an unofficial one, but it would be really fun. The end of a Weird Things podcast is to just have a song made about the summary of all the things we listen to.
Oh my gosh. Or what if your newsfeed was only songs? Like, you wake up and the first thing is a song tells you in a poppy way what's going on in the world. Who's invading?
You will always wake up to a new version of We Didn't Start the Fire with today's news. We didn't read the headlines.
I'd be okay with that.
I did a version of We Didn't Start the Fire because I put out a tweet that actually got liked by Suno, which was, these things as study aids could be amazing.
Yeah.
Because you put in the things you have to remember, write a song about it. And I think I can't wait to see what kind of research comes out, because I can't imagine like it just not improving retention. And so I did like We Didn't Start the Fire with like Roman history, which actually, if you want me to try to pull that up, I'll try to find
While you're pulling that up, I'll confess, you know, music as mnemonics is not a, you know, it's a pretty old idea.
It's the original idea.
Yep.
But
the second oldest profession.
I remember in sixth grade, we had to memorize I don't know if it's a canonical D 150. I lost the word. What's the word that modifies a word?
Modifiers.
Preposition.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. And they were all arranged alphabetically. And part of the reason I did well on that test was because I put them to the tune of the theme song to The Facts of Life. And so as a result, now nearing 50, I can still remember about, above, across, after, against, along, among, around, at, at. And then after that, it kept on going. So kind of there's nothing new under the sun, but it's powerful stuff. Were you able to find it, Andrew?
Yeah.
All right, let me hear it.
This is one, actually. This was actually like historical events. Like, I just asked like ChatGPT, like, write kind of like We Didn't Start the Fire. And it's nothing like the sound of it, but it is like the tone poem. So let's hold on.
Archimedes, Euclid, Alexandria's birth. Mama Gifta, Aquarius, meet back down. Pursuing for knowledge, we'll press on. Copernicus, Galileo, Kepler's laws of motion.
Anyhow, you get the idea.
Oh yeah. My God, that's great. So did you feed it that list or did you have that list generated?
I used ChatGPT, or I think Claude used one of those to do it. And then I did one too for Caesar. I wanted to do Roman history, but I did rap.
I'd love to hear it.
Let me tell you about a man named Caesar, Latin cool, the Roman leader. He was ambitious, he was bold, copied Paul and made him empire unfold. A military genius, he won many wars with legions, strong in elephants galore, crossed the Rubicon with a daring plan, made himself dictator in control of the land. He brought reforms, made the Senate shiver, gave the plebs a voice, made them feel bigger, improved infrastructure, built great wonders, but not everyone was fans of his thunder.
Another version.
Yo, let me tell you about a man named Caesar, Latin cool, the Roman leader. He was ambitious, he was bold, conquered Gaul and made empire unfold. And
Isaac Newton, let's see this
one. S. Kramer says, Lin-Manuel Miranda better watch his back. It already raps better than him.
Also, like this, completely sincerely believe is going to revolutionize education for a lot of people, because like if it's an easy hook and it already matches things that you like, you're going to remember it.
Here's that Newton.
Run at seas 43, Isaac Newton was a prodigy, a brilliant mind. Scientific odyssey. At Cambridge he studied math and physics with great zeal. His ideas would soon transform how we see the world for real. Isaac Newton, the father of classical mechanics.
Another version, just
Morning saints from free, Isaac Newton was a prodigy, a brilliant mind destined for scientific odyssey. At Cambridge he studied math and physics with great zeal. His ideas would soon transform how we see the world for real. Isaac Newton, father of classical mechanics.
Anyhow, there you go. So music for study notes.
Yes.
Absolutely brilliant. And it does show, you know, obviously we've talked a lot about pushback to AI, but the reality is that this wave is coming and it is here and it is being embraced on a level that it is because it is useful. And what we are seeing now is what can you do if it took less effort to do it, right? So like everything that you just did, Andrew, in a world previous, it would just be effort too far to even think about to have somebody either if you were going to do it yourself, it would be a pain in the butt. If you were to hire somebody to do it, it would cost a lot now. But at the cost of enter. Yeah. Hell yeah. You'll do it.
I did want to. I thought it'd be fun to do a diss track from Leibniz to Newton because of the whole.
Oh, yeah, because they both claim credit for calculus.
I got a bone to pick. So-called laws, they make me sick. You think you're the father of calculus? That's rich. I was writing fluxions while you were in the crib. Integration and differentiation, that was my creation. Just copied my style, a blatant imitation. Took my ideas and claimed them as your invention without giving me credit. That's academic tension. Your theory of gravity's got no action at a distance. My monads are the truth, yours are full of inconsistencies. Action principle, nah, bro, that's optimal. My God works in mysterious ways, not clockwork mechanical. I've got mad respect from Euler to Lovegren. We're newly bros, no, I'm the real deal.
So anyhow, I did want to also just Claude Shannon too.
This is who?
Claude Shannon. He's the father of information theory. Basically the guy, the Shannon limit, you know, understood like how much information can you actually like communicate through basically like everything kind of that we have awesome today with computation stuff came from Claude Shannon. So do a little, okay. Try this.
Okay. After this, I have an idea.
Not a G16, a mind for math and a knack for machines. At MIT, he made his name. Father of information, rising to fame.
Anyhow, that's where Claude gets his name from. Anthropic's model, by the way, is Claude Shannon.
Okay, so we have to do the Patreon bit, but while we're doing it, Andrew, I have a bit of a challenge for you. Could you possibly see if by the time we're done with the Patreon bit, you could have something that explains to the uninitiated what Broca's area of the human brain does? Do you feel like you could do that? Okay. Well, Justin and I remind people that patreon.com/weirdthings is where you keep our show alive. If you are digging our stuff and want us to show up every gosh darn week, then that's how it begins.
Folks, it would die. I'm not going to lie to you. It would slowly lose consciousness. It would begin seeing visions. It would remember everything that ever happened in its life, and then it would go away. But you, the patron folks, you keep giving us money, and all of a sudden, it has a reason to live. It's out here serving you every single Friday because we love you, and nobody else does. And they won't. They'll lie to you and say that they do, but
that's something that we don't talk a lot about. Normally we would mention the fact that you get the After Things podcast where we talk about what it's like to be an independent creator of all stripes, but kind of beneath them still waters lurks a demon.
Your family and friends don't love you. Only us.
Yes.
And we've heard them talking crap about you, but we didn't want to say anything because we know that it's obviously complicated, but yet we're here to tell you the truth. We love you. Give us your money.
Well, and we talk about goblins a lot, and we imply that we might have found out what goblins are.
Yeah.
It turns out goblins are all of your family and friends.
Yes.
Anybody who is not us. I'm sorry. Breaking news. Patreon.com/weirdthings. Do you have something for us, Andrew?
Well, see, all I did here was I put in the query, write a song about Broca's area with the brain does. So this was, Udio was the first one to come back. Suno's still figuring it. And I had ChatGPT write one, but let's try. This is the song titles Articulate My Core.
Words take flight in my mind where the speech flows, yeah. Articulate my thoughts, reveal my core, yeah. Speak my truth, unveil, put confusion far from here, yeah. Language.
Folds. Right, this is another one.
In the folds, the folds. Born in the left hemisphere, thoughts transformed to the words you hear. Broca's gift, now speech appears.
And just so you understand, everybody understands, I didn't have enough time to go actually have like ChatGPT write the song. So I just took my prompt was write a song about Broca's area of the brain does.
Amazing.
And from that, it figured out what the hell I was asking. So that was Udio that did that. Let's check in on Suno. Again, you know, as these things become popular, their servers get hit a lot. But, and the Udio, that was only 30 seconds, but man, we got the Pink Floyd version.
Oh my God, I have to hear the Pink Floyd version. Or is that what we just heard?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, listen to this.
Yeah, it is.
what an age. And now I'll talk to you like things that are going to take a little longer. We saw the videos of Sora, which is OpenAI's video generation model. Now, the challenge for these things are you're not going to get a video model to do something that an image model can't do right now. And if you told an image model right now, let me look through the windshield of a car, have a nun driving, a monk in the passenger seat, and two penguins in the rear. And I'm not aware of any image model that will do that. you know, that there may be some really sophisticated prompting you might have to try to be able to do. But the thing I've mentioned this term before, it's called variable binding. And that's where it's one thing to say, do a portrait, you know, of Einstein, you know, do a portrait of a woman in an astronaut outfit. But when you say, put a wristwatch on their right hand and a milkshake in their left hand and put something in the back, you're asking the model to put all these elements and assemble them together. Now, we as humans, we do this naturally. We keep track of things a lot. We're very good. You ask an artist to compose a thing, we can do that. For AI models that have to plan everything in the interaction, that creates orders of complexity because the interaction, this object interacts on that object and that object and that object, and there's a lot of calculations that come into play there. So that's the way you can sort of test models. Like people, there'll be like a new version of Stable Diffusion or Midjourney, like, oh, it's amazing. It's so better. It's like, and yeah, like it will be very aesthetically pleasing. But the other metric you have to look at is the logic. Can it do placement of objects? And the earliest version we saw of this was fingers on hands. You know, these models are like, there's things that stick off of the wrists, you know, like yeah. I have to count them. Is it really important? And they're like, no, you need to count them. Be precise. Like, fine, I'll do that. But even the state-of-the-art image model right now, as far as variable binding, is DALL-E. And if DALL-E can't do something, then a model like Sora is not going to be able to do it. So when you think about like, oh, when is video going to replace the film industry? I don't know if it ever replace it, but you're going to be using it for a lot of things. Some things sooner, some things later, but some things that are complex are going to take a while.
Yeah. Yeah. And the more that people, I mean, I think this is where prompt engineering and stuff like that is important, but also I think more to your point, just understanding the limitations of the tech and where yeah. it's where it's amazing, where it isn't, and why there are failures. I think what we are moving past, and geez, you know, this is a lot of the lessons that we learned on the internet. We are just speed running things that took a year are taking like 2 months, but I think we're kind of past the point of like, LOL, tech dumb, tech stupid. Look, I asked it for this thing and it didn't do it. I keep asking it for this thing and it won't do it. Like, I think we're kind of out of that, at least amongst the vanguard of tech people already, which is like fascinating because it only started like 4 months ago.
Well, I'm quick to point out to forgive my use of the word normies that it's like, they're all like, well, I typed it in and it said something not true. And I'm like, accuracy is not its game. we're getting there on accuracy, but for now, creativity is extraordinary, in the AI space.
Yeah.
So I just tried this with the an Udio. If you click on it, let me just share this. This is pretty cool. I didn't know this. I'm learning as we do the show here. I clicked on the thing, and you have the ability to say extend. So I took the first thing we played from Broca's, and I said extend, and so it made it a minute six. And you can tell it at it.
I was just going to say, for those not familiar, Broca's area is linked with the human's capacity for language. Hopefully it,
yeah. It's also a great Nick Cage, John Travolta movie.
So you can add here. So what I did is I clicked on the original version. I said, add a section and added it. And I clicked on that here. And so I can say, add another section. So I can add another section. So I'm not even going to write it. It's now going to extend that by basically taking that 30 seconds, adding another 30. So we're at a minute 30, and then I can go click and say, add outro. And then add an outro to it. So we could play this later at the end of the show or whatever, and we could see what the whole song sounds like. But kind of, I like the interface. Saying I like it because like I like that version. Every time you do it, it spits out two versions of it. And you can then choose the one you like and continue to extend. You can customize. You can write your own lyrics. You can do a lot of neat stuff. And I think that a lot of musicians, you know, will probably use this because it's a great way to test a song.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great way to sort of test something and then do that. And then you could be like, great, give me the instrumental version. You know, if you're a musician, like just give me the instrumental version and I'll do that.
Well, and that's one of those things in the iterative creative process. There are some people who love white paper and there are other people who want to start with something and figure out what's in there. You know, I'm part of the latter. So it's like, give me something and then let me hear it. And I'm like, no, it's wrong. And then I have to ask myself, why is it wrong? And then I have to fix it. And then it becomes truly something original at that point.
Yeah. One thing too is that the cost of these generations is extremely cheap. It is like stupidly cheap. And so we talked about before the idea of using songs to create things to help memorize. And I was talking about this with my wife the other day about how I could imagine if I wanted to do a thing in the future is I could, I think that we're going to have videos. We're going to have everything. It's going to be a video surface. You're going to have high, laser projection systems, things like this. Then you can have anything could be, and it could be literally, I could walk into my, office. And if I wanted to look like the Harry Potter library by just projecting onto the walls.
Yeah.
And the idea that you have AI continuously generate like, hey, Andrew, I made a rock song today about your itinerary for the day. And just the idea that we think about, what happens when we use AI to replace Netflix? What happens when generative AI is everywhere?
Yes.
In everything.
That's the biggest thing. I mean, the utilities of this technology is its inexpensiveness and its speed, as well as its power. The power is what everybody focuses on, the creativity, but the real super, super, super exciting part of it is that it's going everywhere. It's going to be like fentanyl. It'll be in everything.
Yeah. Sorry, I was just checking the track.
Oh.
But yeah, I mean, I think like, yeah, every day a Randy Newman-esque song explains to you what your day is going to be. That's certainly in play. I mean, that's the thing is like, we are just scratching the surface on what we would do if we could, because our brains have been hardwired to understand the costs
and
that are about to be non-existent.
This is also maybe a positive trade-off. Like we've previously expressed that we're uncomfortable with the fact that social media's trade on our information or whatever, but if an AI had seen the last 14 years of my Twitter tweets or whatever, it would have a pretty good idea. And it knew my demographics and age and all that stuff. It would have a pretty good idea of how to motivate me. Let's say I'm asleep and I hear, yo, bro, get up. Come on, you got this. And it's like, it's me, Jack Black. I'm going to tell you about your day. and it's like, first off, you got to do the Weird Things podcast, but don't worry about that for now. You've been making promises about delivering these deliverables for the goodie bags for the VIP for the Eclipse event. So let's get on that one first. I can give you 50 minutes on that one. And then you're going to move into the whatever. Also, Justin usually calls you around this time. He might want to have lunch over at Pluckers. Get ready for that one. And I'm like, that would become boring every day. So then as a result, it would change it the next day. It's like, hey, Brian, it's Beck. We don't talk very often, but I know, but I wrote this song for you.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
Like a termite
song.
Choking on a splinter.
Yeah. I guess. And that's the thing is that, what's exciting about it is that it's new and it's all possibilities. And so much of it is happening so quickly. And right now, as Andrew and I have been talking a lot about the amount of models, the speed in which they're iterating, and the cost for them is it's brain breaking what's coming. It's too cheap to not be everywhere. It's too powerful to not be beloved.
And it also is moving, exponentially faster, which human brains are not really good at grasping. And in a world where I regularly encounter people who have only heard about AI stuff, but have never touched it or used it or have even seen the acceleration, it's going to be very strange and to some, I assume, scary.
But that's the story of all technology, right?
Yeah.
Like human brains are not prepared for me to be able to go find somebody in Rwanda and say, sup, but I can right now if I want to. I can see live videos and pictures from around the world. The human brain, quote unquote, is not supposed to handle that. This will be it'll be fast. We're going to feel the wind in our face. There's going to be a lot of things flying by us that we're like, wow, I didn't expect that to happen. But,
well,
we're just going to love it. If it is succeeding, it's going to be because we're using it.
Well, and you're right, because in Tim Wu's book, The Master Switch, he paints a pretty good portrait of network effects, where like you made a telephone, great, you go from point A to point B, but then everybody starts doing it. And that is also, you're right, I withdraw my proposal. It's not like we've never encountered exponentially
brain-breaking exponential.
Yes, success. Exactly. Right. Yep. Because we already did that with the phone and with television and.
Example I've been using for people, because like I've had this conversation about the fear of AGI. I'm like, and I think I made this previously here, but I'll reiterate, is that we humans were very... One of the things that made us succeed over other primates is that our ability for cooperation and cooperation with strangers and the way for us to exchange information. And when you want to think about what is an AGI going to be like, well, imagine I took 10 super brilliant people, put them in a room and gave them a lot of money and tools to do things. Well, that's called a startup,
yeah.
You know, and, you know, is our fear of AGI any different than our fear of, you know, Google or some other highly organized company of smart people. And you could say that the rate at which it'd be smart is going to increase, but we've dealt with that. We have a pattern for dealing with that. It's called teams, you know, it's called organizations, it's called armies. Like, this is what these things work. It's a number of discrete agents working towards perfect multiplying their capabilities. And, you know, assuming that'll be the most efficient thing. So the humanity has been dealing with this, but under different words.
Yeah. I mean, and obviously there's always terror about technology, but so far it hasn't killed us.
Yeah, I'm 100% success rate so far.
Yeah, let's roll the dice.
Yeah, I was in a meetup last week. I was over a talk was over at OpenAI and speaking to somebody who's worked with one of these organizations who's worked on, you know, AI safety and stuff. And we talk about it where he, like me, we're like I can give you the very happy scenario and I can give you the scary scenario. And I can go back and forth in 10 minutes, you know, in 5 minutes, you know, just like which one is which. So I'm not comfortable with people who are just, it's all this, all that. Like, I can give you the economic argument why this is going to be nothing but, you know, net, you know, benefit. But when you get into like, you know, what happens with all this raw power, whatever, like, yeah, the world is going to change. It's going to change in crazy ways. Not immediately, not as fast as we may think it will, but it will.
Yeah.
Do you agree with the hypothesis that in the short term, we're not going to see individual AI agents causing trouble, but we're going to see bad actors using AI to enhance their
nefarious
bad actingness? Yeah. I was talking to David McRaney from the You Are Not So Smart podcast, and he wrote a book, How Minds Change. And he talked about the weird experience where, as he interviewed academic after academic after academic, he desperately wanted to believe that the science he was uncovering couldn't be used for bad. And every single one was like, no, it could be used for bad, you know?
Well, yeah. And that's the thing, is that we want to, you know, man, we've gone through this with the whole pandemic thing where every day the evidence is just, it just bolsters the case it was a lab leak. You know, the proximal origins paper, which is supposed to say, look, it came from the, you know, the market, so many problems there, the timing's wrong. Turns out one of the authors of that had actually worked with the Wuhan Institute for Virology, which wasn't disclosed. And so, like, literally a person who had a vested interest in making sure that the finger didn't point there co-wrote a paper to debunk that, and that wasn't exposed and considered, you know, horrific. It's, and again, there are people, I know some people like, oh, we don't, I'm like, I invite anybody to do a deep dive into it. You're literally going to come to the conclusion that the most likely explanation was a lab leak, not an intentional, you know, plan by the Chinese to do something, just a dumb lab leak, you know, where there was the whole diffuse proposal that went before. Like, it's just, it stretches credulity to think that this was anything other than that, given the background on it, et cetera. Point is, the problem is people have a problem with this because science be good. Science is good. And it's like, yeah, science itself is fine. The problem here was the bureaucracy. The problem was people making decisions on things that they knew where they were going when they went, didn't go by the science, they went by their intuition. When they made choices that compromised what they knew to be accurate or scientifically true and whatever. And saying that's the thing that I have going forward is that, you know, you can't assume the best intentions or that we're all going to act rationally, that we're all going to do the right thing, because that didn't happen. There are 20 million dead people that I think happened because people decided to fudge some grant proposals and some reports and stuff because they're like, what's the worst that could happen?
Well, yeah, we found that one out.
Well, and even then, 20 million dead. Not to drag us back into this conversation, but it's like the problem wasn't even the gain of function research, in my opinion. It was the fact that we kept it secret and then covered it up. It's like, boy, life would have been a lot different. I'm not saying it would have been totally fixed, but it would have been a lot better if we knew exactly what it was, which we would have if we would have had transparency after the leak, but we didn't. And that brings up other questions.
Yeah. So, yeah. And again, I know that it's a topic that makes people uncomfortable, but I'm also like, man, like it's kind of the most important thing that sure. we need to sort of resolve. And nobody, the thing that frightens me is the lack of introspection on behalf of journalists and other people. And it's like, it's done. It's done. It's like, that's never
did you,
answer,
did you read the so. NPR article from the Free Press this week?
I read the headlines in the tweets. So it's the same thing as reading it.
Yeah, I read the whole thing, and he goes into specific details in a way that I didn't expect that.
Well, and specifically about he lists the lab leak situation as a thing that. So for those of you who did not read it in the Free Press, there is a column by a man by the name of Yuri Berliner. He is like a 25-year employee of NPR who knows whether or not he'll make it to 30, but
I was about to say it was a bold decision.
It's gonna, yeah, I don't suspect he'll be there much longer, but he talked about the lack of journalistic curiosity that has pervaded at that institution specifically. And one of the things that he pointed out was that it's like, hey, we gave a lot of time to Adam Schiff. And then a lot of the stuff that he was saying didn't come true. And instead of us saying, maybe we should think about putting Adam Schiff on the air again, there was really no questioning. And that consistently happened, not only on a daily basis with the certain kinds of stories that they wanted to run with, but also in things that they got wrong. What troubled him was that there was no internal reckoning of why did we get this wrong and how can we do better? It was a lack of curiosity on that part. And I can talk for a billion years about, you know, how these things go in journalism. And it is a bit, you know, it's so on the nose that it's like almost confirmation bias for me. But I don't think that there's much of an argument to say that this is a thing that's going on.
Well, there was one section of the article that I thought was very, cleverly put together, where he was talking about how there was an increasing emphasis on DEI. I'm not here to chime in on the DEI thing, but he says, if what we're trying to do is have more diversity, did you notice that not one person at this entire segment is a Republican?
The DC employees of NPR, he counted 87 Democrats in editorial positions. Goose egg on registered Republicans.
And when he brought that to the team, the response was, that's kind of weird.
Weird.
Anyway. Mm. And then he kicked it up the stream and never, it didn't go anywhere. But it seems like he was a true believer that a combat arena of good ideas is a healthy thing.
Should be.
Well, that was why, you know, Barry Weiss left, you know, New York Times and whatnot, is there are people who hold classical, like say classical progressive values, which is the idea that like, I believe the world should be this way, but I also believe in a discourse. I believe that we should have a dialogue.
Yeah.
And a lot of these news orgs, New York Times, have sort of mutated into this place where they're going to be as partisan as the Daily Wire, but without declaring that.
Yes.
You know, and I would say even more hostile to outside opinions than Daily Wire. Daily Wire will, you know, welcome different viewpoints. And, you know, Fox News, I would say, you know, for a lot of the faults of Fox News, you know, Hillary Clinton had pointed out that she could go on there and talk. She could go on there and get her time in and go over there and do that. And that was one of the things that Fox News was like, it was obviously, you know, partisan, but also there was a kind of, I would say, more of a separation between who were the editorialists versus who were the journalists there.
Yeah. I heard a great interview with Brit Hume.
I like Brit Hume a lot, by the way. I think Brit Hume is just, I follow him on Twitter and he's just a pretty,
I love him because now as he is entering into his like Dean phase of television journalism, he just has like increasingly less F's to give and will just like kind of crack loose. But the interview that he had was, he was talking about his time at ABC News and he was like, look, I knew I was probably more conservative in my private life than everybody else that was on air, but we would have very spirited conversations about how to handle things. And at the end of the day, we had a big fiery conversation and then we would all march forward with an idea of how we were going to present it. But it wasn't like anybody was quiet. And, you know, the idea of Fox News as crafted by Rupert Murdoch and Roger Ailes was, let's do news that is as straight down the middle as you can with a story selection that is more catered to people that feel like they are not being spoken to in mainstream media. And then at night it's the opinion section and you're going to have colorful personalities doing colorful things. But during the day, the news gathering is what it is, except the stories are going to be things that we just believe are undercovered. We are going to ask questions that we believe other people are not asking and there is an audience for. And even now it's like, you look at, I tend to find a lot of television news pretty worthless. But there's no argument that I think specifically when it comes to like live remote stuff, Fox News right now is the best in the game and everybody else has pretty much surrendered it to be totally in studio, just panel after panel, discussion after discussion, interview after interview. But there's not a lot of people that have made their bones being on the front lines in Gaza, on the border, stuff like that, that are there every single day, that are gone to multiple times a day. And you as a viewer can say, oh, okay, I think I know this person's perspective, how they see the world. And now at the very least, I can do my own calculus on what it is, but I don't think that they're actively trying to gaslight me. And that's rare in this day and age.
Yeah. And some people in the audience are just kind of, all they're going to hear is Fox News, Fox News, Fox News.
Yeah. I mean, that's fine. But yeah, it was interesting. The Free Press thing is, it was just a very classically Barry Weiss story because it's like, her modern career has kind of been started with like the same headline. We liberaled too hard, says liberal. this is another version of that.
Yeah. But yeah. And I guess like the main thesis here is just the idea that you really do want to have an environment where you're exposed to different ideas. And it is not the most comfortable thing. And I would say we certainly saw this with like the 80s and stuff with like these Christian colleges that were very insulated and sometimes put out people who were very naive about how the world worked.
Liberty University. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. And that was disturbing because, you know, sometimes it felt like the product of some of these wasn't all that different than what we'd be getting from, I don't know, some school in Iran.
Yeah.
And then we see that on the other side of it. And, you know, even, you know, colleges now in many places, you know, the concept of the idea of a safe space going from one, like, hey, when I get stressed out, I want a place to chill, to like, I never want to encounter an idea that's unpleasant to me. And like, well, listen up, Buttercup. That's not a good way to, you know, prepare yourself to the world.
No.
The world is filled with uncomfortable ideas.
Speaking of uncomfortable, I got a pick if we want to do picked.
Let's pick it up.
Look, I have made a name for myself by being really, really nasty to anybody who craps on a adaptation of a thing they love before it comes out. And I understand it comes from a place of fear You love the thing. You don't want to see the thing screwed up. Then they came for me because I love Fallout. I have played every iteration of every variation of every game, starting from Wasteland, and I went back and watched the movies that inspired the visuals from Wasteland, like A Boy and His Dog, and so on. I played Brotherhood of Steel, Fallout Tactics. I played every single version, and I love this world. The fusion of cheery optimism and horrific Wasteland violence has always been a special place in my heart. And when I heard that the folks who did Westworld were going to be handling this, I'm not going to lie, gentlemen.
One of the producers, Brian, one of the directors. Team there.
I'm not going to lie. I for a brief moment,
skeptic,
became nervous. I am proud to report I am 4 episodes in out of the 10, and this thing rules. They got everything I wanted, and I'm not going to give any details, but boy, is it good. Boy, is it good. And I just loved it. I've loved everything so far, and I will continue to love it. And that is, you know how Brian sincerely means it? He didn't go on to give spoilers.
Look at that. Look at that. And by the way, nary a metaphor.
Wow. I just flatly told the truth.
Look at that. Oh. That's great. That is next on our list. And we now actually do have time because we finished, my wife and I, The Regime on HBO, starring Kate Winslet. It is a 7-episode miniseries about a fictional Central European country and a increasingly despotic legacy chancellor played by Winslet, who is doing a Liz Truss impression. I loved it. There's a moment where you wonder whether or not it's going to veer, because it is a silly show. There is a surrealist element to it. You wonder whether or not it's going to land in a big comedy kind of way, or it's going to take its characters seriously. I am here to say it takes its characters seriously. It never stops being surrealist, but it is actually telling a really interesting story with all of its characters, and they all hit resolutions that I thought were interesting. So if you are into political stuff at all, or you like Kate Winslet, she's great in this. The Regime.
My pick is, it was very nostalgic for me because I remember being a young British pilot traveling to the Japans and visiting there, and my experiences. My time living in Japan was very similar to Shogun. Really, really similar. I can't say that my boss there had committed infanticide, but yep. I wouldn't rule it out, you know? My wife and I are like 3 episodes into Shogun. I really dig it. I like the production value a lot for what it is. I think it's beautifully composed. It literally looks nice. To me, one of the things I contrasted where like both it and 3 Body Problem are limited by like streaming television budgets, you know, yeah. 3 Body Problem. God knows how much money ended up in the actual production, but I was frustrated with 3 Body Problem by how cheap it looked from the guys that did Game of Thrones. It, you know, stretched a dollar incredibly far. And there are scenes in 3 Body Problem where the VFX are really bad. And people are like, I don't know what you're saying. Like, well, email me. I'll show you this. And you'll go, oh yeah, I forgot. someone in the comments said Andrew declared war against the Portuguese while living in Japan. Funny you should say that. One of the things when I was there, I hung out with, I met a girl and her mother. They were like Christian missionaries there. And because my father had ran into like, you know, their father or whatever, someone said, oh, you should meet my sons. They came out to meet me once, and we go to some location or whatever. And I'm not trying to be a jerk. It just came naturally. And I go, you know, what's really interesting here? This is where they actually killed all the Christian martyrs.
Oh my God.
And the look on their face was like, why would you say that? And I'm like, oh, you know, it's a historical point about this. So anyhow, Yeah, I really like it. I think the guy that plays Blackthorn is great. I think the casting's good. I will say that, man, if you thought it was hard to keep track of who's who in Game of Thrones, this is...
We watched the most recent episode last night, and there was a character who's like, my father would be pleased. And I'm like, oh, you're related to that other dude? Oh, geez. Yeah, it is one. If watch it early in the night, make sure that you got your eyes on it. If you need to go to the bathroom, pause, because it is heavily in Japanese language. It's all in subtitles. So do yourself a favor. It's easy to get lost, but when you follow it, it's great. It's really enriching.
Yeah, I thought, by the way, you know who plays Vasco Rodriguez?
No.
The Portuguese sailor. That's Nestor Carbonell from Lost.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you're like, this guy is great. I'm like, who is it? Oh, it's him from Lost. You know, so, I mean, he just does it. The beard is great. I think the characters are great. Cosmo Jarvis is a guy that plays Blackthorn. I think he's great. I think he's a guy that's going to have a big future ahead of him because I think the way he plays the role just does such a good, you know, he's one of these people that kind of, he's been in stuff and then all of a sudden you see him in more stuff. But there's a character who comes in like the second episode or whatever and does a bit of info dump. Like, well, don't you know, this is so-and-so. I want this guy to pop up again. Like I need, yes. You know, I'm against info dumps normally, but I would love like, hey, you're free. Like, yeah. So here's the thing you need to know. And you're like, So, that's my biggest crit is
once an episode, a character's like, you fool, don't you realize all the things that happened over the last three episodes?
And my other crit is like, just everybody speak English, because we're fine having Blackthorn talk to other people in what is actually supposed to be Portuguese and not English.
Yes.
So what are you proving here? Like, what are you proving? So,
yeah. I mean, aside from, this, I don't know if this is racist. the Japanese language, best grunters in the game. Nobody grunts like a Japanese language speaker, and boy, are they great. If you're an enjoyer of Japanese grunts, oh man, a smorgasbord in this series, Shogun.
Yeah, a bit of that. Very much enjoying it. Like I said, the production design I think is really well done. Comparing that to other shows, where like
I mean,
there's just none.
Oh, exactly, because it's shot in Vancouver, where like every cheap show has been shot ever, and it always just looks like a bunch of dorks running around in costumes in the woods. The fact that they make it look like medieval Japan is amazing.
That was a measured glance left and glance right from one Andrew Main.
No, that was Andrew just clicked on the Suno AI Brokus song.
Let's hear it. Let's go out on this.
All right. So Shogun, you can see a bunch of the other things. Like I literally, you can see some of the songs I've made here. It's great. You
know, all right, here. Say the end tag and then we'll go out on the song.
It's been weird.
A place where words reside, Broca's area, where language comes alive. It's the center of my speech, where thoughts are formed and sent, connecting all the dots, making language heaven sent. In Broca's area, the words come alive. It's the magic in my brain that helps me thrive. With every syllable, every phrase I say, Broca's area. Got in my words each day. When I'm catching feelings, it speaks the words I can't deny. Expressing all my love when I say, I'm yours, oh baby. From sweet conversations to weird. brains. Broker's area, the mastermind behind the scene, is the center of my speech. My thoughts are formed and sent, connecting all the dots, making language heaven sent. In Broker's area, the words come alive. It's the magic in my brain that helps me thrive. With every syllable, every phrase I say, Broker's area, adding my words each day.
We own that song now.